آل محمد صلوات
سورة الفاتحة. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: فمن يخرج من بيته مهاجرا إلى الله ورسوله ثم يدركه الموت فقد وقع أجره على الله وكان الله غفورا رحيما. صلوات على محمد وعلى محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد.
Before I start, there's another request. If you can please move to this side or this side, there's room over here, so that those people in the back will have some room to sit, those who are coming in. The discussion is regarding journey of insan, of man, to Allah. How does one reach Allah? What is the way by which a person reaches Allah? This is the goal of the creation of mankind. And hence, to fulfill this goal, one must know how to go towards Allah. And this is the place where we see that life is a travel. Human life is a journey. Everyone is journeying. And there are two places, there are two types of journey, an inward journey and an outward journey. And Islam also has invited people to take these two journeys. One is an outward journey, a physical journey. The other is an inward journey, or a spiritual journey. And the outward journey is known as Hajj. The inward journey is known as jihad. And yesterday we were discussing the difference between these two journeys. What are the differences between the two? And I had mentioned one ayat yesterday regarding the fact that when people boasted about serving the Kaaba and they thought that that was a greatness, unlike any other greatness, or unlike any other feat they could accomplish. So Allah made a decision and said that those who serve the Kaaba or the house of Allah, they are not like those people who believe and do jihad. those who do jihad in Allah's way, in the eyes of Allah, they are much higher than those who do service of the Kaaba or the house of Allah. And when we see these two things, this ayat at that time was revealed in particular for Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. Because the boasting was being done to show that he had nothing to do with the service of the house of Allah. And then Allah said that you boast about this. What is really great in the eyes of Allah are those who believed and did jihad in Allah's way. And hence, this is the principle that he gave all along. So now if everyone serves the Kaaba, in other words, if everyone serves the Kaaba and they feed the Hajis and they look after the house of Allah, they hold the keys to the Kaaba, if they do whatever with the Kaaba, if all the people are on one side and they do khidmat or service of the house of Allah, they can never be equal to that one man who believes and does jihad. You see that? So all the Muslims on one side, they cannot equal one believer who's doing jihad in Allah's way. So this is a difference that Allah has made in this ayat I had mentioned yesterday. Now, there is one more difference. There's the other differences, but one more ayat I'll mention today. And obviously, this ayat, where Allah is explaining about an incident, a dua that happened. And this dua was made by the mother of Hazrat Maryam. She went to the house of Allah and she made a dua that Allah, give me a child, a son, who would serve your house. Right? Listen to her dua. She said, that Allah, give me a son who would serve your house. She's asking for a child. In particular, a son. And who would do what? Who would serve the house of Allah, the masjid. So then, when she became pregnant, and the child was born, it wasn't a boy, it was a girl. You see that? It wasn't a boy, it was a girl. And she looked at that, and she said, I had asked for a son who's going to serve your house. So she came and she asked Allah that, Allah, what have you given me? I wanted someone to serve your house. I wanted someone to serve your house. And you gave me a girl. And Allah replied to her. Allah replied to her. He said, we know what we gave you. لَيْثَ ذَكَرَكَ الْأُنْسَى. We know that boy is not like a girl. We know that they are two different. A boy is different. A girl is different. Right? But now you see what Allah says. فَتَقَبَّلَهَا رَبُّهَا بِقُبُولٍ حَسَنٍ. Allah has accepted her dua in the best way possible. In the best way possible. And we gave you a daughter that is unlike any other son. We gave you a daughter that is better than every other son. And we know what we are giving. He is reminding the mother of Maryam, remember what you asked us for. And we are replying according to your request. You said that you wanted a child. You wanted a child. who will serve my house. And I am giving you someone who is going to serve my house. You see that? Understand this. If she had said, brothers, what did she say? She said, I want a child who's going to serve your house, Allah. You asked for that request, and we are telling you that this girl would serve my house better than any other boy can. You see that? She can serve my house better than any other boy can. If you had said that, give me a child who would do jihad in your way, then I wouldn't have given you a girl, I would have given you a boy. See that? I gave you a girl because I know that the girl can serve my house, but the girl cannot go out and fight in my way. That's the reason Allah, you see, has taken jihad away from the responsibility of woman. He took jihad away from the responsibility of woman, and He gave her a child who's a daughter, and a daughter can serve the house of Allah. You see that? A daughter can serve the house of Allah. And here we see that when jihad came in view, when fighting in Allah's way, when that came in view, here we see, my brothers and sisters, and understand this very carefully as I explain this to you. What does it mean? What does it mean here? That jihad is such a great action that the greatest reward a man can earn is kept in jihad. See, the greatest reward a man can earn is kept in jihad. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. You know, he says, فَوْكَ كُلِّ بِرٍ بِرٌ حَتَّى يُقْتَلَى فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ أَلَيْسَ فَوْكُهُ الْبِرٌ. He says, upon every good deed you can do, there is another good deed. All good deeds are not alike. Every deed has its level. You pray, it has a level. You fast, it has a level. You do hajj, it has a level. Every good deed you do, every goodness you do, has a level. And each of these levels are higher than the other. And Rasulullah says that these levels go higher and higher. And they reach their climax where? They reach their height where? When you give your life for Allah. He says, حَتَّى يُفْتَلَى فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. When you give your life in the way of Allah, when you give your life in the way of Allah, there is no greater deed than that. There is no greater deed than that when you give your life in the way of Allah. So now everyone heard this, and they also know that in order to achieve that greatness, in order to achieve that greatness, you have to go on jihad, you have to go on the battlefield and fight. And the men heard it, and the women also heard it. And the women now are thinking that this is the greatest achievement anyone can make. This is the greatest achievement anyone can make. And this achievement can only be achieved through jihad. This achievement can only be achieved through jihad. Now they were a little bit confused. And jihad is taken away from women. So in other words, women do not have access to this reward. You see that? I mean, isn't this the case? Women do not have access to this reward because jihad is not for them, and the only place you are going to give your life is jihad. And hence what happens is that women do not have access. And they were a bit confused. It seemed like Islam has divided the rewards. The higher rewards are for men, the lower rewards, the average rewards are for women. It seemed like that to them. So they came to Rasulullah. They came to Rasulullah. And who best to go to than him? who can truly answer it in the right way. If they go to the mullahs, you know, they'll be like, get back in your place. But no, they knew where to go and they went to Rasulullah. They went to the Messenger of Allah. And they said, oh Messenger of Allah, there's something that we don't understand here. Please clarify this for us. You said that the greatest achievement anyone can make, the greatest achievement anyone can make is what? To die in Allah's way. And the only way to die in Allah's way is if we go to jihad. If we go to jihad, then how is it that women are not able to go to jihad? How will they achieve that greatness? It means that we don't have a chance for that. See, before I explain the answer, let me explain one more thing. Let me explain one more thing here so that you understand the answer. Send me a salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Brothers, can you just move forward one more time, please?
One more time, brothers. A little bit more. So now, you see, the fact is, there are two terms in Islam. Understand this. Allah says, يُجَاهِدُونَ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ and He says, يُقَاتِلُونَ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. There's one word which is called jihad, and another word that is called qital. Qital means to fight in the battlefield. This term is narrower than jihad, which is a broader term. Jihad also implies, it also means to fight in the battlefield and many more things. So you see, when we say that women are not allowed to do jihad, this is actually incorrect. This is actually incorrect. What is correct is that you should say women cannot do qital, not jihad. Because jihad has many fields, jihad has many places. So if you understood this concept, now let me explain to you their question and the reply of Rasulullah again, so you understand what his reply was. They said that we cannot earn reward. We cannot earn reward. The highest reward is to give our lives. We are not able to earn that because that could only be in jihad. That can only be achieved in jihad. So Rasulullah looks at them and replies to them. He looks at them and he replies to them that who says that jihad is not wajib on you? Who says jihad is not wajib on you? The only difference is that the field, the battlefield of jihad for men is different and the battlefield for women is different. But jihad is wajib on both men and women. Jihad is wajib on both men and women. So now, the ladies were confused, now they are more confused. Said, wait a minute, how? What do you mean? Where is our battlefield? Where do we fight? Where is our jihad? Where do we reach that ultimate goal and achieve that greatest award? Where do we do that? Now understand Rasulullah what he says. That the jihad for men is in a different battlefield. The jihad for women is in a different battlefield. They said, where is the jihad for women? He said, jihadul mar'ate husnul taba'ul. The jihad of the woman is to have a good relationship with her husband. Everyone is silent. You see that? Understand, my brothers and sisters, what jihad is. What is jihad? Here, men are asked to do what? Go on the battlefield and give their life. Fight. Either kill or get killed. And women are said to do what? That when they have a husband, then they should have a relationship with them in the best way possible. You see that? This is their jihad. Now what happens? In reality, what happens? Men run away from their jihad, women run away from their jihad. Imagine that. You have the men to do their jihad, they're running away. You have the women to do their jihad, and they're saying, what, me? But you see, the reward that Allah has kept, and understand this, my brothers and sisters, no one knows what is good for us more than Allah does. No one knows how we grow and how we can grow spiritually more than Allah does. And when Allah gives an answer, when Allah makes a decision, it means that is the best course of action in our life. If we do not take that, then we make our own decision. Then we are now trusting our own decision. And you know what? Every one of you know in your own life that when you made your own decisions, looking back at your decisions, you can yourself analyze how dumb they were. Look at your own life and see what kind of decisions that you have made. But here, let me explain one more thing to you. You know, this is not a part of the speech, you know. This is just a tangent I'm going on. Because I had been requested to recite about the jihad of women. So I said, I'll do that. Right? But I want to explain this so that it really makes you understand this. I don't know if you heard this or not, but I will explain this riwayat, this hadith in a short way. If you send me salawats. You know, a man came to Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam. And he said what to him? As they were talking, he said, you know, alright, you know, one more break, inshallah, you know, let's make as much room as we can in the front because there's no room in the back. One more time, salawat. Now everyone knows, right, you know, that you can come early tomorrow so you can get a good spot. So this man is with the Imam, sixth Imam. And he, as they were talking, learns that he can know about his future. And he says, can you tell me about the future? Imam said that Allah has given us the knowledge. He said, then tell me what's going to happen to me. He says, I can tell, but it's not good for you. I can tell, but it's not good for you. He said, but no, I want to know. I want to know. And the Imam said, no, it's harmful for you. You will not be able to bear it. Imam said, no. The man said, no. He insisted. The Imam, alright, said, alright, your horse is going to die next week. The man listened to that. He said, oh my God, my horse is going to die. So what should I do? He sold his horse. I mean, when you find out, you know, your car is going to break down, you sell the car, you know. The other owner is like, you sold me a lemon, you know. So, he sold the horse. So now when he sold the horse, he made the money, the horse died. The horse died, he said, man, this is good. This is good. Right? So he came back to the Imam and said, listen, I mean, this was good. This was a good trade. You said it was going to be harmful for me. You said it was going to be harmful, but it's good. Now I want to know something else. Then I want to know something else. Imam said, no, it's not good. Then no, please tell me. I need something else. What's going to happen? Tell me. I need to know my future. And he was on his case, and the Imam said, all right, your house is going to break down. He said, my house is breaking down. I mean, if you know, your house has termites. Yeah, so what do? All right, sinkhole. You know, what do? You don't tell the next owner. That's what you do if you want to sell it. So what do? He sold the house. He sold the house. He didn't tell the other owner that it's going to break down. Even if he did, the owner wouldn't believe it. What are you talking about? He did. He sold the house. He got the money. The house broke down. You see? The house broke down. So he earned of the horse. He earned of the house. Now what happens? Now he came to the Imam and said, you said that it was going to be harmful for me. You said it was going to be harmful for me. But that knowledge of the future was good. We earned the reward. I earned of them. I got advantage of it. Now I want to know something else. Now the Imam didn't say it's going to be harmful. He said the third thing. He said, you are going to die next week. Understand this. Understand this very carefully. He said, you're going to die next week. And this guy was in a shock. He said, what do you mean? I'm healthy. I'm young. How am I going to die? It's not my time to die. Why is it going to happen to me? The Imam now explained to him, and understand this, my brothers. Who should make decisions for you? Imam said, Allah was going to take your horse. Allah was going to take your house in order to extend your life. But because you had the knowledge of it, you made the decision for it. Now your life is shortened because of that. See, it is better to leave those decisions in the hands of Allah and say, Allah, you make the decision for me. I might make mistakes in making a decision. This is the reason when Allah makes a decision on something, we trust that decision will be the best course of action for us. Otherwise, if we see that Allah is making a decision in the Quran, if Rasulullah is saying something to us, then we shouldn't be like, well, this goes against the way I think. We will only harm ourselves when we make decisions that are against what Allah and the Prophet have said. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. And hence, now we see, jihad and hajj, they are two journeys. Both of these are journeys to Allah. Both of these, we see, are a travel. One is an outward travel, the other is an inward travel. And the destination is different. One is to the house of Allah, one is to Allah. But you see, even when one makes hajj, the goal is not the house of Allah, but it is Allah. When you go for hajj, you don't say, I am making hajj in order to seek nearness to the house of Allah. If you do that, your hajj is batil. When you make hajj, your niyat is what? That I'm making hajj, qurbatan ilallah, not ila baytallah. You make the niyat so that you can go near Allah. Whatever action we do, the goal is Allah. The objective is Allah. It's not the house of Allah. You see that? Otherwise, being near to the house of Allah is meaningless. It's useless. In fact, those who are near to the house of Allah are the worst people. See that? Those who seek nearness to the house of Allah and they are near the house of Allah. And they have always been there. Before any Muslim came there, before anyone came there, who was in the house? You know, 365 idols. Right? There are 365 idols, one for each day. One for each day and one from each tribe. Imagine that. 365 idols are in the Kaaba. And now, they are inside the Kaaba. And there's one thing really, if you reflect on it, and I want you to reflect on it now. Why did they bring these idols to the Kaaba? I mean, imagine this. Why did they just make another place for these idols? Those who made these idols, of course, these idols didn't come out themselves. They were made by some others. When they made these idols, why didn't they put these idols in another place? Why did they have to bring him to the Kaaba? Why did they bring him there? Understand this, my brothers. If these idols, those who made these idols, they knew that these idols have no attraction. These idols are worthless. If they have another place for them, no one would come there. So, the best thing is to do what? When you have something worthless, when you have something meaningless, then the next best thing is to take it to a place where people do come. You see that? Take it to a place where people do come. Of their own selves, they have nothing to offer. So that's the reason they took over the Kaaba. They brought the idols to the Kaaba. Why? Because they were not confident of the attraction of these idols. They said, people come to the Kaaba anyway. So let's put these idols in the Kaaba. So that when the people come to the Kaaba, then the idols can take the credit for it. See, imagine that. See what's happening. These are put there in the house of Allah. Why? Because they know they cannot attract. So when they are there, now the people, they come to the Kaaba anyway. Because that was the way from the time of Ibrahim. People came to the Kaaba. People had honored for the Kaaba. So now when they came there, they saw idols there. And those who used to run the idols and their religion, they used to say, you see, people come from worldwide to visit our idols. They're not visiting your idols. They're visiting the Kaaba, but who's going to differentiate? But I want you to understand something, my brothers, from here. Those who are weak, those who are not confident of their own abilities, those who are not gifted and do not have greatness, those people always go to a place where they will be noticed. Because they know by themselves they will not be noticed. That's why they go to places which are known so that they will be noticed. Imagine this. Now, I want you to compare this with what I said yesterday. Rasulullah left Makkah to go to Medina. You see, Rasulullah left Makkah to go to Medina. Medina was nowhere. Medina was not even on the map. No one knew about it. Everyone knew about Makkah. Someone who wants his message to be known, he comes to Makkah. And everyone comes there and he's able to give that message. For Rasulullah, it was wise in the worldly sense to stay in Makkah so that his message would be known by the people. But you see the difference between the gods of kufr and the messengers of haq is this, that the gods of kufr are in need of great places to be noticed. And the messengers of haq are those that even when they go to a place like Yathrib, it becomes Madinah Munawwara. Imagine this. How weak are these idols that they need the house of Allah to be noticed? How weak are they? And that's the reason those who are weak, they stay around people who are known. Those who are weak, they stay around people who are known. You see that? Because there are many of the companions who had no greatness of their own self. That's why this hung around the Prophet. And they still are hanging around there. Because if their grace were somewhere else, no one would go there to visit them. See that? If they had any greatness of their own self, then wherever they are, people would go there. And that's the reason they are right next to the Prophet. They're right next to the Prophet. Why? Because they know people are going to come here anyway. So while they come here, right, they'll be able to see us also, notice us. But you see, the greatness was in Ahlul Bayt. That no matter where they went, they attracted the world towards them. See that? No matter where they went, this is the reason the Imam who went the furthest away from Medina. Imagine this, the Imam who went the furthest away from Medina. At that time he was known as Gharib al-Ghuraba. Imam Rabah, you see, how far he went. And they said that he went so far away from his homeland. But I want you to see that when a great person goes somewhere, he goes somewhere, you see how he attracts the world towards there. When you go to Mashhad, you see that there's not even a chance for you to go near the Zari. No matter what day you go, no matter what time of the day you go, there are so many people visiting him, so many lovers, so many people who honor him and adore him, they visit him. There's no place for you. How can that Imam who went the furthest, he attracted so many people. Imagine this. Even when I went to Hajj, and those who have been there, I explained to them. I said, listen, when you come to the graves of the Imams of Baqi, and then when you go to Mashhad, really, after Hajj, and after I saw the graves of the Imams in Medina, when I went to Mashhad, I told the Imam, that Imam, I cannot call you Gharib al-Ghuraba anymore. Those are Gharib al-Ghuraba who are there in Medina. Truly, look at that. They are the ones who are Gharib al-Ghuraba. And hence, my brothers and sisters, greatness, no matter where it goes, it takes its greatness with it. It has the power to attract the people without being in need of anything else. Only those who are weak, they are the ones who are in need of others. And they attract others. Many things I wanted to say today. But inshallah, I will stop here at this point. When those who are confident about themselves, when they go somewhere, they are not worried what's going to happen to us. They know that wherever they go, they are going to take their ideology and their iman and their aqidah with them. See, you came over here. You know, you came over here. And you have come for different reasons. For different reasons you came here. But I want you to understand why Allah brought you here. Baba. I want you to understand why Allah brought you here. Baba. You see, we came from different lands. Some came from India, Pakistan, Iran, Arab, Middle East, all these places. We came from different places. Some are from here. And we are here together. And everyone, you see, came for different reasons. Some came for education, some came for jobs, some came as refugees. Whatever the reason you came here for, my brothers and sisters, understand, why did Allah bring you here? Why did Allah bring you here? Allah says that in the Quran. He says, why did He bring you here? He explains that in the Quran. And you see, He says, فَذَٰلِكَ جَعَلْنَاكُمْ أُمَّةً وَسَطًا. He says, we have made you a nation that is in between two parties. See? Allah brought you here for what? He brought you here as an answer to a question that will be raised in the hereafter. And He says that there are two sides. There are two sides. And you are in between that. Imagine this. فَذَٰلِكَ جَعَلْنَاكُمْ أُمَّةً وَسَطًا. That you are in between two sides, and He brought you here between two sides. And what happens when you see the two sides? Who are these two sides? Let me explain that to you more. Because when you see the next part of the ayat, then you'll understand. He says, لَيَتَكُونُ شُهَدَاءَ عَلَى النَّاسِ, to make you a witness on the people. وَيَكُونُ الرَّسُولُ عَلَيْكُمْ شَهِيدًا, just like the Prophet is a witness on you. Just like the Prophet is a witness on you. You were brought here as what? As witness. And what type of witness? Just like Rasulullah is a witness on you. Now in order for us to understand what type of witness we are, let's first understand what type of witness Rasulullah is. When you will be raised on the Day of Judgment, as a Muslim, when you will be raised on the Day of Judgment, on the Day of Judgment, on the Day of Judgment, Allah will ask you, so, did you pray? Now, when you hear the question, you have two ways to answer. Either you say, you know, I was busy and my job was taking too much time. And you know what? I just didn't pray. So, alright, you have no excuse. Either you don't have any excuse and you say, yeah, I didn't pray. I didn't feel like it. I was watching my favorite show. Whatever the reason you give, right? You didn't pray. So now, what's going to happen with you? Well, that's between Allah and you. Whatever He wants to do with you, now He has the right. Okay, that's one way of you answering. The other way of you answering is to say that, listen, I did not know that prayer was wajib. He said, what? You didn't know prayer was wajib? I didn't know prayer was wajib. I thought it's a good thing that people did it. I didn't know prayer was wajib. So if you claim ignorance, understand this, if you claim ignorance, then what will happen is that Allah will tell the angels that go and bring the Prophet. The Prophet will be brought there. And he'll come there. And Allah will say that this is a Muslim. He's from your ummah, from your nation. And he's claiming that he did not know that prayer was wajib. Did you tell them that prayer was wajib? Now Rasulullah, hypothetically speaking, has two answers. But he's going to answer in one way. But I'm adding this so that you understand the different angles. Hypothetically speaking, he could say, Allah, I left that out. He could say that. Hypothetically speaking, it's possible. But, you know, it's not going to be the case. What's he going to say? He said, Allah, I have told them everything they need to know till the Day of Judgment. So if they claim ignorance, it's their own fault. And then he, just like that, will be a witness against us. And now Allah will grab our neck and do whatever He wants with us. You see that? So Rasulullah became a witness on us. Now Allah is saying that you are a witness. You are a witness on the people just like the Prophet is a witness on you. See that? You are a witness on the people just like the Prophet is a witness on you. So what does that mean? That means a kafir, an infidel, a non-Muslim dies. And he is raised on the Day of Judgment. When he's raised on the Day of Judgment, and he happened to be from Dallas. He happened to be from Dallas. So what happens? Now, Allah, He's not going to ask him about prayers. He's not going to ask him about fasting. He's not going to ask him about Hajj. The only thing he'll ask him is, why didn't you accept Islam? He's not a Muslim yet. So the question of prayer doesn't even come. Question of fasting doesn't even come. Question of Hajj, Zakat, Qum doesn't even come. What comes? Why aren't you a Muslim? Tell me. Why didn't you accept Islam? Now that guy has two ways to answer. He says, I knew about Islam, but you know what? I couldn't leave my beer. So, if that's the answer, then it's his neck and Allah's punishment. Whatever Allah wants to give him, it's his right. And he will show him why it's his right. So now, when that happens, imagine this. If that person says, that's one way of answering, but if that person says that, Ya Allah, I didn't know about Islam, no one told me. No one told me. So now Allah will say, bring the people from Mu'min. Bring the members of Mu'min here. At first the EC. The executive committee, for those who don't know the EC is. So what happens is that when they will be brought there, then Allah will ask them, now tell me, this person said he doesn't know about Islam. Did you make the effort to tell them? And there, we have two ways of answering. We have two ways of answering. We can say that, Ya Allah, you know, I was busy, we were all busy, and you know, we were so busy in trying to make ourselves happy, that we never got a chance to take your message out. We never got a chance to give the message of Islam to the people. Allah will say, then what did I bring you there for? I brought you there so that your message, my message can reach the people, so that you can be a witness on the people. And you can tell them that if you claim ignorance, you're lying. We were working. We were inviting. Our doors were open. And we were telling everyone to come. And if you did not come, it's your own fault. If you do not have that answer, my brothers, then we are all in trouble. Then we are all in trouble. So now imagine, what does Allah mean when He says that you are a witness on the people? You are a witness on the people, so that means you better have an answer on the Day of Judgment. Did you do your job? Allah is not asking for you more than what you can bear. Did you do your job? He's not asking you, my brothers, to sacrifice like the people of Karbala. He's asking you a little bit. 5 minutes, inshallah, I'll end the masail here. Inshallah, we are late today, so inshallah, you know, next 5 minutes I'll end it, inshallah, you know, and we'll have more, inshallah, tomorrow. Now imagine what sacrifices the people of Karbala gave. What sacrifices the people of Karbala gave. How much is Allah asking of us? And He's saying that if you do that much, if you do that much, as to be my hujjat on these people, then I will place you with the martyrs of Karbala and the Hirat. I will place you there in the martyrs. Can you imagine that? How great a reward Allah is willing to give. Do you know what is the reward of Allah's worship? My brothers and sisters, just imagine this. Rasulullah had said that a mu'min who prays, who worships Allah for 1 hour of worship in this world, Allah will give him the reward, the pleasure of the reward that Allah will give him in the hereafter. For 1 hour of worship, not long, 1 hour of worship. Rasulullah says that 1 hour of worship, Allah will give him so much pleasure in the heaven, so much pleasure in heaven, that if the pleasure of that 1 hour is given to the inhabitants of hell, they will forget hellfire. Imagine that. How much reward Allah is willing to give you. What kind of pleasure Allah is willing to give you. Just for 1 hour of worship. And this is the reason. Today, this zikr, this remembrance of Ahlul Bayt and Imam Hussain is itself is an ibadah. This is an ibadah, my brother. And this is an ibadah unlike any other ibadah, because this worship gives life to every other worship. Now I want you to see, this worship that we do, this crying that we do for Imam Hussain, this is not a normal thing. Really, it's not a normal thing. You see, in order to bring out emotions from the people, how many ways do people try? They write books to make people tearful. They make movies to make people tearful. Always they're either a climax or a suspense that makes you emotional, that makes you cry. Without this, you see, no one will be moved. No one will cry. They need to use all these tactics to make people cry. But tell me, what suspense is there in the story of Karbala? Everyone knows what happened. Everyone knows what happened. When you hear, for example, when you hear that Abbas went out with a water bag, is there anyone expecting to hear anything different? Is there anyone expecting to hear anything different? That there might be water coming back. We know what happened. We know that the water didn't come back. We know that Sakina was waiting at the tent. We know the children were looking at Abbas and their hope was in Abbas. We know that. And every year we listen to it. But every time we listen, we are crying. Every time we are listening, we are crying. Now you tell me. Any movie, any book, anything that is written to make people emotional, if you read it one time, two times, or if you hear any tragedy one time, two times, three times, after that, it's over. Now it doesn't move you. But this Karbala is that story. It is that incident. It is that movement that no matter how much you listen to it, the emotions are coming out. The tears are falling. The reason is because, my brothers, this mourning, this crying, this matam, this all this mourning that we are doing, this azad that we are doing, it is having that backing of the dua of one mother of Hussain. It is Hussain's mother who made dua. It is Hussain's mother who said, who will cry for my children? And then Rasulullah said that Allah had said that He will create a group of people who will cry for your son, who will mourn for your son in every generation, and you are that group of people. Now imagine this, Abbas, when Imam Hussain reached Karbala, I described to you, since the time he reached there, the army started to come. The army started to move in. Thousands upon thousands, they started to move in. But since the night Imam Hussain's tents were in camp, you see what happened. Everyone, when you looked at those tents, you would see in those tents everyone either praying, either reading the Quran, either making dua. These are holy people. These are people remembering Allah. Everyone is involved in some sort of worship. But there is only one person that we see who's neither reading Quran, who's neither praying. All he is doing is taking his horse and going around the tents, making sure no one comes inside the tents. No one comes close to the tents. That's Abu Fazl al-Abbas. When we looked at Abbas, we saw that from the time Imam Hussain reached Karbala, his only job was to make sure that none of this enemy comes close to the tents of Hussain. From the second Muharram till the time of the 10th of Muharram, every night Abbas goes around the tents, and all night he makes sure that no one comes close to the daughters of Hussain. No one comes close to the sisters of Hussain and the Ahlul Bayt of Hussain. But wow, that protection Imam was such that everyone in the tents, when they used to sleep soundly. They never were awoke. They were never afraid when they used to go to sleep, because they knew Abbas is outside, and if Abbas is outside, no one can come inside. But you see, when Ashura came, and the night of Ashura came, until then Abbas was awake. Now when Abbas went to sleep, now the ladies are awake. Now the ladies are awake, and the enemy is sleeping. Now when Abbas died, now you see what kind of brains have changed. How did this battalion change? Abbas, when he went to sleep, now you see who's going around the tents and who's going around the children. Zainab-e-Kubra, when he goes around the children, making sure no one comes there, and she calls out to Abbas and says, "My brother Abbas, my brother Abbas, you used to protect us until you were alive. Every woman and every child can go to sleep, but today you are sleeping, and watch me, your sister Zainab is doing the rounds of protection." Brothers and sisters, inshallah, we will move to the other hall where the matam is going on. Yeah.